Households and businesses with smart meters could be rewarded with discounts on their energy bills this winter if they reduce their electricity consumption during peak hours under a scheme launched in England, Scotland and Wales today. The Demand Flexibility Service, devised by National Grid Electricity System Operator, ESO, and approved by the regulator Ofgem, will offer discounts which could total up to £100 for households based on them receiving £3 per kilowatt hour and more for businesses. Energy customers will have to be with a participating supplier. Octopus, which last weekend took over the customer base of failed firm Bulb, has already confirmed that it will be running the scheme, having trialled it earlier this year. Other firms have been in consultation with the energy system operator ESO to launch the service for their customers. The firms will need to monitor electricity usage in real time, which means only energy customers on smart meters that can provide half-hourly readings will be able to participate in the scheme. The scheme will start with 12 test days between 3rd of November and 31st of March next year. Participants will be given 24 hours notice to reduce their electricity consumption for an hour between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. on weekdays. Customers who change their usage, for example, by using their washing machine or dishwasher at alternative times, will receive a discount. The electricity systems operator, ESO, will pay energy suppliers offering the service a minimum of £3 for every kilowatt hour during the test period. It is up to each firm to decide how much of the sum they will use as an incentive for their customers and how they will pass on the discount to their customers.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Hussein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran. Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the US cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this. The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights. He also added, the US has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere. Perhaps he was referring to the role that the US has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on US's destabilizing acts in the region. The UK's involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups, and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces. And the French capital, Paris, commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring, as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia. And this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced 3 rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28th attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home, these incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have spiked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence as an answer to unwanted results. Nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent, supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he's going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6th Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority. From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28th attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home. These incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have spiked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence as an answer to unwanted results. Nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he's going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6th Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
With the increase in the prices of gas, electricity, gasoline, and the intensifying inflationary pressure on the consumers, one out of every six American households is unable to pay their electricity bills. Most Americans do not accept President Joe Biden's explanation for the higher prices of gasoline and fuel, and say he has performed poorly in managing the U.S. economy in general. The U.S. President Joe Biden claims that Russia is responsible for the increase in the price of oil and gas, but a new opinion poll shows that only 1 in 10 Americans, or about 11%, agree with this explanation. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the U.S. media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The New York Times reports, gas, electricity, and gasoline prices in the United States are creeping higher, reversing a months-long streak of declines and chipping away at a potent talking point for the Joe Biden administration, which has been emphasizing its success at easing pressure on the American public since this summer. Though the uptick has followed a rise in crude oil prices, analysts point out to two new factors that are also pushing gas and gasoline prices higher: a loss of refining capacity in California and Ohio, and rising demand in recent weeks. According to data from the American Automobile Association, the AAA, the national average price of regular gasoline stood at $3.89 a gallon on Friday, 7th of October, climbing for more than 2 weeks. That's lower than the record of about $5.02 a gallon reached in June of this year, but still higher than usual for this time of the year. Prices have made a particularly big leap in California. At about $6.39 a gallon, prices are close to the state's June record of $6.44 a gallon. Gas prices there and in other western states, including in Nevada and Arizona, jumped after several refineries in the region closed for maintenance. The rise, should it last, could increase pressure on the White House to act quickly to bring down prices. A spike in gas prices, which followed a surge in crude oil and other energy costs after Russia's conflict with Ukraine, became both a political liability and a policy headache as consumer prices rose across the board. President Joe Biden, who over the summer responded to the increase in gas prices by chiding energy companies for profiteering on consumers, released oil from strategic reserves and encouraged Saudi Arabia to produce more oil. Gas prices eventually started to decline. The global oil prices tumbled amid rising concern about the slowing of global economy and demand eased. The recent jump means White House officials have been pressed to address the issue once again. Brian Deese, the director of the National Economic Council, said on Thursday, 6th of October, that energy companies need to lower prices at the petrol pump. Analysts say the refinery shutdowns will be temporary, and the fact that Americans tend to drive less in the winter months could keep prices from climbing as sharply as they did back in June. But a recent rebound in crude oil prices, which rose nearly 17% this week as the world's major oil producers agreed to cut production, means predicting what's next will be difficult. The Hill has covered the same story, but from a different angle. According to a Gallup poll released recently, the American public's view of the economy are declining as gas prices are rising. Two-thirds of the American public surveyed in the poll conducted recently said that gas prices are causing a moderate or severe financial hardship on their household. That figure marks an increase of 15 percentage points from the 52% who said the same back in April, and is among the highest that Gallup has found when posing the question during periods of gas price increases since 2000. Meanwhile, Gallup's Economic Confidence Index, a summary of Americans' ratings of current economic conditions and outlook for the economy's future, dropped 13 percentage points from last month to minus 58. The index ranges from 100, if all respondents describe the economy positively, to minus 100, if all respondents describe the economy negatively. The index's current score is the lowest since February of 2009, when the country was still experiencing the Great Recession. The all-time low was minus 72, recorded back in October of 2008. 8 out of 10 surveyed adults in households earning less than $40,000 a year said gas prices have caused a financial hardship, and 4 out of 10 describe it as severe. Almost three-quarters of respondents from the households earning between $40,000 and $99,999 reported a hardship, and 40% called it severe. Half of respondents from households earning more than $100,000 a year reported a hardship, and 22% called it severe. Aside from the political consequences, a sustained rise in gas prices could affect how businesses and consumers view the U.S. economy. In July, falling gas prices were a key part of the better-than-expected reading of the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, offering a brief glimmer of hope to those looking for signs that inflation has peaked. Russia Today has also covered the same story. According to a Rasmussen poll published recently, just 11% of the American public believe Russian President Vladimir Putin is to blame for record-high gas prices in the United States. The majority instead blame President Joe Biden. More than half, or 52% of respondents to the Rasmussen poll conducted recently, pointed to President Biden's poor energy policies as the reason gas prices have become unaffordable, meaning the administration's Putin's price hike narrative does not appear to be catching on. Those who blame neither Joe Biden nor Vladimir Putin point their fingers at oil companies, with 29% of respondents suggesting the industry is leveraging the current geopolitical instability to jack up its prices. Perhaps aware that his Putin's price hike narrative no longer holds water, Joe Biden has been leaning towards blaming oil and gas companies for the ruinous costs of fueling up, recently accusing the industry of making more money than God. President Biden has insisted that oil companies are deliberately holding back from drilling because they make more money not producing more oil. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen recently warned that gas prices may spike again this winter. In an interview with CNN, Janet Yellen said gas prices could rise due to the European Union largely halting Russian oil purchases this winter and banning provision of services that allow Russia to ship oil by tanker. Janet Yellen said it is possible that that could cause a spike in oil prices. The price of gas is widely viewed as a critical issue heading into the midterm elections this November. Some 92% of voters saw the rising price of gas, home heating oil, and other fuels as a serious problem in recent opinion poll, with 68% of the American public calling the problem very serious. With no sign of an economic turnaround and elections coming this November, the Democratic Party is likely to be blamed for voters' economic suffering and both houses of Congress may end up under Republican control.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran has unveiled a new jersey for its national football team for the upcoming 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The new sports attire was showcased during a special ceremony in the capital, Tehran. The event was attended by some of the biggest names in Iran's soccer federation and included a series of entertaining performances. One objective of the ceremony was to see off the national soccer team, who will be making the trip to Qatar in less than a week. The jersey has been created by an Iranian sportswear designer who designed official jerseys for several Iranian sports teams taking part in international competitions. The heavily anticipated World Cup tournament will kick off on the 20th of November. Usually, rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Donna Keane, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis. So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the sense of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of a tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lap component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says it's strange to meet so many people with the same name. Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest's ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. An another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. And here are some of the students of Sevier International Schools, Brother Fawad Haider, Brother Hussein Ruhullah and Hassan Nasrullah, and Brother Ali Nasir. Assalamu alaikum jami'an wa rahmatullah, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Fine, everyone?
Yes.
That's great. Welcome. Let's recommend our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now to stay with us till the end of this Quranic session, inshallah. And in this session, we will be working on Ayah 62 or 62nd of Surah Al-Baqarah. We'll explain shortly about this Ayah and inshallah we'll go on with the Tajweed rules, okay? We'll practice all the Tajweed rules in this Ayah, inshallah. So, if you're ready, before we start, let's once everyone listen to this Ayah, the recitation. And then, inshallah, we'll continue our class. So, great. That was nice recitation. I loved it. Alhamdulillah. So, let's go on. I will read. Make sure you listen and repeat after me. All right? Brothers and sisters, we really recommend you grab your Quran and turn to Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 62, and inshallah practice with us. So, let's go on.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
إن الذين آمنوا والذين هادوا والنصارى والصابئين
إن الذين آمنوا والذين هادوا والنصارى والصابئين
أحسنت والصابئين من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر وعمل صالحا
والصابئين من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر وعمل صالحا
فلهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون
فلهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون
أحسنتم. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Let's shortly explain, okay, some points. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, those people indeed, the faithful, the Muslims, okay? The Jews, the followers of Prophet Musa alayhi salam, those who call themselves. The Christians, the followers of the Prophet Isa alayhi salam, or Jesus Christ. And the Sabi'een, the followers of Prophet Yahya, or I think it's called John in English, right? So those of them who have faith in Allah and the last day, and act righteously, فَلَهُمْ أَجْرُهُمْ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ they shall have their reward near their Lord, Allah Almighty, وَلَا خَوْفٌ عَلَيْهِمْ and they will have no fear, and وَلَا هُمْ يَحْزَنُونَ nor they will grieve. Okay, so this ayah says an important thing. Apparently it means that the people, the Christians, the Jews, okay, and the Muslims who have faith in Allah Almighty and the Day of Judgment, it means they will go to heaven. Apparently it means this way.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض
حياتي. How to learn Quran easy. What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
So, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ هَادُوا وَالنَّصَارَى وَالصَّابِئِينَ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا فَلَهُمْ أَجْرُهُمْ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ وَلَا خَوْفٌ عَلَيْهِمْ وَلَا هُمْ يَحْزَنُونَ إِنَّ الَّذِينَ نُنْ مُشَدَّ إِدْغَام مِثْلَيْن and also gunna sound, right? Yes. Innal ladhina this sound. Amanu, long vowel sounds, make sure you pronounce them correctly. Amanu wal ladhina hadu, right? Two long vowel sounds, not hadu.
Yeah.
Hadu. Even one of them is not short vowel. You say hadu or hadu. Both are long vowel sounds. Hadu. One nun mushadd. One nasa. Oh, heavy letter, right? Awesome. Nasa ra. Both are heavy sounds. One nasara. Wasa biina. Right? E-R-E sound. So, man amana. Okay, man amana. Nun sakin, we have plus Hamza. Hamza is from the throat letters. And when we have nun sakin plus throat letter,
Idhar.
So, four rules we had. Change, merge,
hide.
No rule. Which one?
No rule.
No rule will be applied. So you just read it normally, okay? Man amana. Fawad, read it. Man amana. Read it.
من آمن.
أحسن. من آمن. بالله. We said in the previous sessions as well, if brothers and sisters have listened to us, we hope so. So we said that if we have the word Allah or Allahumma, for the pronunciation of the letter Lam in this word, we have two cases, either lightly pronounced or it will be heavily pronounced. We just need to take a look at the harakat before, or the vowel sound before. If there is a kasra, the word Allah, the Lam, the letter Lam in the word Allah will be pronounced lightly. Illa, billa. But if we have fatha and dhamma,
heavily
pronounced. Like what? Allahumma itself. Right? Yes. Allahu itself. Okay. We have a kasra here, so we should lightly pronounce it. Billahi. Wal yawmil. Those hamzatul wasls that we have made hamzatul wasl, so we skip them, right?
Yes.
You know
yes.
all the rules. Wal yawmil akhiri wa amila salihan. If you stop here, tanwin fatha. When you stop, will be changed to? Huh? Huh?
Alif and sukun?
No. Tanwin fatha will be changed to? Fatha.
No,
Alif. Alif mad.
Alif mad, yeah.
Salihan will be changed to? Hasan. Saliha. Right. Yeah. Saliha. Great. Falahum ajruhum. Aj. Jim Sakin. Hussein.
Huh? Sir, qalqala.
Qalqala, mashallah. That bouncing sound, yes? Tickle it. Let it move. Aj. Aj. No. Aj. Ajruhum. Inda. Inda. Nun Sakin plus dal. Haha. Ikhfa, yes. Hide the sound of noon. Inda rabbihim. Wala khawfun. Tanwin dhamma. Plus ayn alayhim ayn. Throat letters. Idhar. No rule. Yeah?
Yes.
Normally read it. Wala khawfun alayhim. Wala hum yahzanun. That was all about the tajweed rules in this ayah. Make sure you practice, brothers and sisters. Stay with us, inshallah. We'll be here with you in the next coming sessions. Every time at this time, okay? Every night at this time, inshallah. Stay with us. Thank you. Allah bless you, inshallah. If you have any questions?
No, sir.
Nothing?
No.
Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International Schools Network. See you, inshallah. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل الفرج.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRI.